because they really inform how we think about our kids and how we cultivate this intelligence in our home. One of them is that as kids grow, they go through milestones, right? So we tend to think about this in terms of physical milestones, and they'll have growing pains in their knees or things like that, and all of a sudden they hit that growth spurt. So this happens emotionally as well as physically. And so if you've ever had a child that was like sleeping through the night, I remember this happening, because I had the idea as a parent that once my child slept through the night, that'd be it, right? Like gold. So when my son started waking up at night around like 5-6 months, I was like, what the crap? Like, you were sleeping. I got used to that. And then it happened again a couple years later when he started having bad dreams at night. I'm like, oh my gosh. Almost always it correlated with an idea of how he was growing physically or cognitively or emotionally. Something was happening. And we would go through this like experience of turmoil for a little bit, is what it felt like for me, because I like sleep. And then it would settle back out again. As whatever it was that he was growing through, he mastered, he achieved. Okay. So if you get to the point where you're like, where did my golden child go? Like, I thought we were making progress. Consider the context. Okay, let's broaden back out our horizon. Look at what's going on around us. We all have these kind of cycles that happen for us. And I don't know about you, my end of the day cycle is not so pretty. And so I try to avoid intense conversations with my children at night, because I know that my tank is really low. And I let them know that, like, I'm kind of tapped. I really want to talk about this with you. Can we do it tomorrow when I can give you my full attention? Unless it's really immediate and urgent. But these kind of things are really important for us to be aware in these conversations, that life, I wish, was just like this straight uphill path. It's not. More like around the mountain, and we see the same scenery over and over again. Like, oh, we get to this side, and I'm like, oh, I've been here before. I'm a little higher. I see it from maybe a different vantage point, but I've been here before. And our kids are doing the same thing. So that is a super important piece when we talk about kids and their emotions. Okay. So the goal is not to dismiss the feelings, seeing them as unimportant. Laura gave a really good, you're being ridiculous. That's more of a dismissing parent. We don't want to be a disapproving parent in terms of you're not allowed to have an emotion, they're bad. And I'm going to stop, let me go one more maybe. Laissez-faire parents, all emotions are good, but we're not going to help you figure out what to do with them. Okay? Just really superbly unhelpful. But I'm going to stop right here and talk about something that is really important and just was brought to my attention again. The way that we deal with emotions, boys and girls, is awful. Okay? Just this week, I have heard people say, well, you know, girls cry over anything. Oh, he's got such a handle on his emotions, so good. Or he doesn't even, he never gets fussed by anything. Like, we tend to hold these people to a high stand or a high level of admiration when they're disconnected from their emotions. And typically, we value men for not having any sort of connection to their emotions, right? What we know is that boys, the research, shows that boys are actually more expressive as children up until about the age of 5-6. And then it tanks. And then they're taught, think about Inside Out if you've seen it. The one primarily male emotion that you saw in the dad was what? We heard it this morning, mad or not mad, right? So they only have one go-to emotion that is okay for them to express, and that is anger. I see some people sort of getting this. Yeah. Oh my goodness, what a disservice we do. Just yesterday, when we were watching this movie Wonder, and my son looks at Augie, who is the little boy who has the disfigured face, and he just made a friend connection, and he gets overwhelmed, and he starts to cry. And I love this moment in the movie because the other boys don't make fun of him. They just come alongside him, and they stand with him, and they kind of tap him, you know, shoot that thing, kind of like knock him, you know, like, we're good, and it's okay. And my son says, I think he's really happy because he made a friend. Yes, he is. And he was able to show it. Another recent, so boys don't cry, right? Put your big girl panties on. I grew up with that one. That's a total Southern phrase, I think. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. All of these ideas that disconnect us from our feelings, and particularly men. So boys really get the short end of the stick. And that is to their detriment. And the other piece of that is it gets feminized and then condescended toward. So the emotional intelligence that we're wanting to build and cultivate, we're gonna have to reckon with some of the luggage, the baggage that we bring into this culturally, because we're not setting up our boys well to be able to do this. And we're actually demeaning women for a skill that they have. One more recent research, and then we'll get into the kind of parents we aspire to be and how to do this like practically. They recently took tears. Now, I don't exactly know how this worked, but they took tears from people who were like gut-wrenching, sobbing, and they gave them to mice. And you know what happened? The mice got sick. What our body is intended to do is flush out toxins. And there's multiple ways that our body does this. We get it when it comes to sneezing, or if you get something in your eyeball and your, you know, your tears come and you're like, oh yeah, I just had something in my eye, just my allergies, right? Like we all try to play it off like, oh no, I'm not sad and I'm crying. But we kind of get that. We have other ways of excreting toxins from our body. But when it comes to tears, that's what this research is implying, is that there is something internal, and they weren't crying because they had something in their eye, they were crying because they hurt. And it actually was enough to be able to have an impact on a small animal. That's the kind of stuff that we're holding in, that we're keeping inside our children when we don't allow them the space to express the full range of emotions. So the kind of parents we want to be, this is the kind of parent I want to be. Value all emotions, negative emotions, according to Laura and the research. We're not impatient with a child's expression of them. Using emotional experience as an opportunity for bonding by offering guidance through labeling emotions and problem solving the issue at hand. Now, I have a 7-year-old who has big feelings, okay? Everything is big. Her happiness is big, her sad is big, and what I have learned to do with her is when she, because there's sort of the fine line between when she's really expressing and it's going into like tantrum area, and I'm like, okay, are you ready to calm down? Are you ready for help? And she'll say no to me. Okay, that's fine. I'm gonna give you space. When you're ready for me to help you calm down, you let me know, and I will be right there. So I leave her, and she finds things. She's got her blanket, she's got a gazillion stuffed animals, and she lays there on her bed, and she holds all her stuff until she's ready. And then she's not fully calmed down, and she'll say, Mommy, I'm ready, I need help now. And I come in, and we take good deep breaths together, and I hold her. I'm not talking yet, right? Her amygdala is still firing. We're not at the place where she can talk and reason, which I think is just kind of a funny thing with 7-year-olds anyway. Like, reason's just not a part of their experience yet. But we try to do it all the time, right? So this is where empathy, space, containment come into play before we even try to engage them anywhere else. So when you said that, I was like, oh, good. The research, I'm doing something good. So before we talk about the kids, you've heard this a couple times today, we have to manage our own experience. I want you to think about these questions, and I know you have space in those notes. write what emotions you saw expressed in your family. And maybe who was allowed to express different emotions. So maybe in some families, the mom had the corner on anger and the dad just kind of withdrew to a corner. Or maybe mom held all the feelings and dad was pretty stoic. And if he ever expressed anything, then it was just the anger. Maybe you had an extremely emotionally healthy family and you got to see these from all the members. Is kicking things up? Another question. What happened when strong feelings were expressed in your family? We're going to get to why this is important very specifically in a minute. I'm not trying to like torture you. This is really important. I did my dissertation on parents talking to their kids about sexuality, and bar none, parents just needed the opportunity to talk about how they were not taught and how that led them to feeling incompetent in talking with their kids about sex. Not to mention sex is like hard to talk about anyway. So I really believe in this concept of us being able to manage our own stuff before we manage our kids and understand what was modeled to us. How were problems solved in your family? Were they put under the rug and never addressed? Did your parents fight in front of you and you never saw the end of it? Did your parents never fight so you never saw what it was like to be able to resolve a conflict? And how do you see yourself following that same default pattern? Okay, this is why I don't engage. I try not to engage at night. Because when I am tired, when I am stressed, all my defaults come right up to the surface. It's what I know. It's what's the most comfortable for me. And it's such an experience of humility when I see it in my children. Like I'm watching them and I get angry with them and then I realize, oh, they're doing what I do. So my son and I, we actually know, like we both have temper problems. So we work on it together. And as much as I feel like I should be above that, I'm just not. I'm just not. I have a temper, and it flares. So, I'm not sure what came up for you as you think about this. But consider and kind of hold this in your mind. What would you like to see change in yourself, in the way that you manage emotions? I'll give you another maybe 30 seconds to finish this up, and then we'll get practical. Can I just say these flowers smell lovely? Lovely. When we talk about self-soothing, come up here if you need a moment. It's very nice up here. Okay, so different than what we talked about earlier, it's just kind of adding in some layers. Identifying the feelings is important, but like, how do we do that? Okay. One of the things, if you've ever seen a counselor, if you've ever been to any kind of therapy conference, parenting conference, anything, you're probably going to hear a lot about I statements. And you've probably thought, why is that important? Okay, so Taylor Swift has a song out right now, and the whole premise of it is you make me do bad things. Okay, now, when we talk about it in terms of behavior, I hate this song. I like Taylor Swift. I don't like this song. And my kids know why. I've told them, I'm like, because who makes you do something? You. We want them to accept responsibility for their behavior. Nobody else can make you go in there and steal candy when you're not supposed to be having it. Nobody else can make you be mean to that kid. Nobody else can make you be kind. You are in charge of yourself. So using I statements allows them to be in control and take ownership of the feelings that they have. Not you make me feel sad, because I don't have control over my sadness if that's in your hands. I can't change it. I am powerless. But if I say I feel sad when, then it's different. I'm gonna get down. So we talked a little bit about these. I feel sad when you are on your phone and I want your attention. Okay, that's one example. I feel excited when you are kind to your sister because I know, like, I can really see how much you love her. So you're connecting, you're saying, this is their feeling, I feel, because of this, and then you're connecting it to their need or whatever their want is. And so feelings are not just esoteric in this way. They connect us to what we actually need in a relationship. And kids need to know that what they need is important. Because I can tell you, as an adult survivor of this kind of mentality, it's important to know what your needs are. Otherwise, you get passive aggressive and sometimes downright ugly in an attempt to try to get them met while still also believing that they're not important. Just like a messed up way of living. So, saying things like, you made me feel, I still have to catch this in myself. I have to remember, it's not you made me, it's I feel. Okay? So the way we model this is important. I like to have these kind of things around my house. The emojis are a great thing right now because they're so popular, and there's lots of different sheets that you can get, and they've identified things I have no idea about. Having faces is often helpful, especially for younger kids. I just put these up on like a bulletin board, on your fridge, on a cabinet. Places you know that you're, I don't know if your kids are like this, mine tend to have spaces in the house where they have like heightened emotion, like this is where we act out. I don't know. Probably our kitchen, we hang out there. So, you know, it's a good place to hang these, have them close. These are as they're getting older and developing more emotional literacy. Yeah, that's all feelings. That's a lot of feelings. So frustrated, discouraged, glad, loved, optimistic, playful, splendid, ignored, inadequate. I have felt all of those things at different times in my life, and I often feel more than one thing at one time. If I had you right now take a moment to check in with your own emotions, you may be feeling like, I'm loving that my child is in childcare. Like, I feel really content. Or I'm feeling kind of overwhelmed by the amount of information. I was thinking about this situation from when I was in college and I feel really sad. Present day, you may be feeling lots of things about relationships or different situations, and some may be really front burner and others are back burner. But they're all there. And all of that can exist at the same time altogether. The reason it's important for us to be aware of what we grew up with in our family and how we were taught about emotions is because modeling is the single most valuable and way of teaching our children, bar none. Body language and modeling are what they are going to follow much more than your words. So I'm gonna give you an example. A couple years ago, so I grew up in Florida, but I was not a swimmer because before I moved there, I had a couple of really unpleasant swimming experiences in pools. So I never really learned to swim, and I don't like to put my face in the water because I feel out of control. I do not like this feeling. I've never been taught to properly breathe with my face in the water, or not breathe, whatever it is. I'm still confused. So my children were at the point where they were ready to learn this skill. And they're watching me swim across the pool with my head above the water, and they are not doing it, no matter how much I encourage them, no matter how much I tell them it will be fine, until I put my own face in the water. And I started swimming, and I was like, you guys, I'm scared. Like, I didn't have good teachers. And so I'm gonna try it. And do you know, it did not take but one or two times of me putting my face in the water and they took off like little fish. Because I showed them that I was willing to step into a space that was uncomfortable and continue to learn and grow. I had to model it for them. Okay? So it's really important. We are lifelong learners with our kids, and I would really encourage you to not feel like you have to have it all together in front of your children, but join them in the journey. Like, everybody needs to know that they're not alone when they feel scared about something, right? I do. And this is something you can offer your kids and say, you know what, we'll step into this together. See what happens. So what do you do to cope with your emotions? A few years ago, whenever my friend Shelley was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, stage 4, she has 3 babies that are like my godchildren, I took off outside my house and I just ran up and down my street. Now, I'm not a runner, but I had a lot of excess feeling that I had to figure out what to do with before I could come back and even sit with the idea that my friend may not make it. Okay, so I know that for me, exercise is where I go. And if I don't have access to it, it may not be pretty if I have a big feeling. So I know that this is one way that I deal with emotions. Another way is I bury it. That's a default pattern for me, is I try to convince myself that what I'm feeling is actually not a legitimate way of responding to a situation so that I don't have to engage in any conflict. I mentioned before, I don't like conflict. You can't have conflict when you have, you can't avoid conflict when you have children. They really are their own little people. So these things are important. How do you problem solve? And talking this out loud with your children. So I'm continuing to learn how to do this, how much goes on inside my mind that I expect them to know without me giving it to them. And so I will talk out loud with them. I had this situation, like what they can manage, right? Like there's some things they don't need to know about problem solving in my adult decisions. But I might share with them a situation that I'm in and I didn't really know what to do and how I decided to handle it. I might share with them something that happened in my past that connects with what they are going through now so they know how I solved the problem, right? My son, confidentiality, right? It stays in this room. Had a recent experience on the playground where his third grade friend came up to him and said, so-and-so likes you. And then the girl came up and said, I like you, and he panicked. He did not know what to do. First of all, they're 9, like 8 and 9. I don't think that, just play dodgeball. But he came home and he was like, I was so embarrassed. Like, I'm so glad you're telling me. I would feel embarrassed too. And it sounds like you didn't know what to do. Like you didn't want to hurt her feelings, but you didn't want her to think that you liked her like that. And so he was like, yeah. And then he kind of shut down for a little while. And I actually didn't respond well. I kept pushing. And then I backed off when I realized like he is really done. But I shared with him later, like that's happened to me. And this is one way you can deal with that. Like here are some words, here's something you can say. And he was like, okay, now I know how to deal with it. Can we stop talking? Yes, we can stop talking. So I think what's hard as a parent, this is my struggle, is busyness, getting things done, managing needs, managing work. And so really this is just about intentionality. Remembering when you think of it, you're like, oh, right. I can say that out loud to my kid. I can talk them through that. What I went through, and just share it. You might share it while you're stirring the spaghetti sauce. You know, nobody ever said you have to be sitting down and like this intense conversation. I think we actually sometimes talk better whenever we're engaged in something else mindless, right? My husband and I have great talks when we are on the road or we're walking because he can move, we can move, and talk. And I actually get more from him than if we're just sitting. So you might also consider that as you're thinking about these kind of conversations with your kids. Okay. Other activities that help build emotional awareness and intelligence: feeling charades. Laura, I want to put you on the spot. Think of an emotion, and can you act it out? Can you like stand up and act it out for us, and we'll guess? Anybody? Anybody? Nervous? There we go. Good. So you can do that with your kids. So I have little scraps of paper that I wrote feeling words on, and we take one out just like charades, and we play them. Sometimes you might have them take a picture and like make a sad face, and you snap a picture, and you make your own feeling chart, okay? So then you're helping them see it and recognize it in somebody else. But it's fun, it's silly, it's not so hard in these moments. Thank you, Laura, for being put on the spot. Creating your own pictures, write out emotions. So let's say I had had Malachi, that's my son, I had had him write out this situation and what he might do, or write down the feelings, point at them. Sometimes we don't have to say it out loud. And then once a solution or peace is felt about it, we rip it up, we burn it, we put it through the shredder. It's done. Okay, so it might resurface, but it might not. Like, let's put it away. Drawing emotions, and I would give no instruction to a child on this. I would just say, can you draw what you feel and see what comes? And then as they're drawing, you look at it, you're like, huh, okay, you start describing it. Can you tell me about this? Okay. Who knows? I've seen kids draw so many different things, sometimes completely Picasso-esque, and then others really specific, you know, situations. Ooh, there we go. A mandala, if you Google this is a fun exercise where it's a particular structure on a page, and if you folded it in quarters, all of them would be symmetrical. And so you can use it, say, in this corner, can you show me what feelings, like if yellow is happy and blue is sad or whatever they choose, how you feel about your friend Maggie? How are you feeling about school in this, you know, over here in this quarter? These are things that I've used this a ton with my own kids, but also clinically, and the kids just suck it up. And some of them color in every little space, and some of them only have one feeling. And it gives me an idea of what's actually going on internally, but they don't have to use their words. Sometimes we kind of put them on it afterward. Avoid calm down, or you shouldn't feel that way. And this goes into that comparison piece, not comparing what a 7 or 8-year-old is going through to what you might feel is important or valuable or stressful. I don't know if you've ever been in a fight with somebody, your spouse, a friend, and they tell you to calm down when you're heated. Does it work? No! there are other ways, and we'll get to these in a minute, other ways that you can talk and encourage them to calm down without using those particular words. Read books, watch movies, stop the book, stop the movie. With whatever you're reading or doing, what do you think this character's feeling or thinking? Okay, two different things, a feeling and a thought. A thought is, I think I will go to the Brick today for lunch. The feeling is hungry. Or the feeling might be excited. But they are two different things, and often we'll confuse them when we talk. But I'm like queen of this in my house. We'll be watching a movie, and I'll just stop it. Like, oh my gosh, what do you think is going on in that character? Like, whoo, this is what I see. What do you see? Oh yeah, I think you're right. Work together to build a list of activities that help your child calm down. Okay, this is where the preventive piece. So a lot of parenting gets reactive because we're just sort of like trying to tread water, right? But if we stop when we're all calm, we're in a good mood, we're in a connected place, and we say, what are the things that you like to do that you think would help you calm down when you're upset, mad, sad, whatever. And kids will give you lots of options. And so I actually sometimes have them draw it, we write it, maybe type it up. And again, you're gonna feel like you've got, she's telling me to put things all over my house. Yes, I am. We are visual people. Remember this part, like body is good, emotions are good. God gave it to me, let's use it. We need the cues. I put on my Be Brave bracelet this morning because I was coming to talk to you and I felt anxious. And it's just a visual felt reminder that I'm not up here alone, right? I can be brave. Our kids need these kind of cues. So the important thing about this is letting them sort of drive this activity. You might have things that you suggest. If you go online and Google 25 ways to calm down your child, or there's one like 47 ways to calm an anxious child, there are great ideas that are out there. And so you can pull those in and be like, hey, what do you think about some of these? Oh, we know this one works. What if we try this one? So brainstorming before things get ugly is key. Exercise. Again, this comes back to our busyness piece. For me, exercise is vital. I have a family history of anxiety, and so if I don't exercise and keep my caffeine to a minimum, those are two really important things, that I get very dysregulated. Actually, I experimented a few years ago with Coke, because I love Coke sitting out there. Coca-Cola. Yeah, not like... Very important distinction. Specificity is important. Yes. Sorry, see, that's a Southern thing. In the South, all pop is Coke, right? Like, yeah. So, yes, Coca-Cola, regular, not diet. Let me be very specific. And I realized that when I was off of that, when I wasn't drinking Coca-Cola, my moods were much more regulated. Sugar and caffeine do nothing for us. Let me just tell you. And if you are a person who has a system that is much more sensitive to that, then I would encourage you to be aware of what you're putting into your body, as well as the exercise that you have. Yoga, there's all sorts of things that you can do. You can run in place with your child that helps siphon off kind of the excess energy before you're able to sit and talk with them through whatever situation is happening. I told Rob, who I don't know his last name, but he asked for the slides. And I will get them to you. So just know that this is a list of questions that you can ask your child at the end of the day, instead of how was your day, or how was school, or was school good, which sets them up to think that every day has to be good. Okay. So there's a few questions. Tell me something that made you laugh today. When were you bored today? The assumption is they will have been bored at some point. How did somebody help you today? Is there anyone in your class who needs a time out? So again, you're building not just their emotional competence, but their awareness of others, what's going on around you. Okay, empathy. Emotions don't have to be fixed. They have to be understood, okay? So do not solve the problem for your child. If you never let your child tie their shoes, you're gonna have an 18-year-old leaving your home with Velcro shoes. Right? Or you're going to be following out the door for like tying their shoes for them. So it's the same thing with our emotions and the social situations that kids bring into the home. Don't solve it for them right away. Give them a chance. You might be surprised by how creative they can be. Describe what you hear them saying, situation, thoughts, feelings. Again, that perspective taking. Get into the shoes of a 6-year-old and at recess, which I'm not sure I really always want to go back to. But again, I have to connect with that own experience in order to kind of get connected to theirs. Let them know they're not alone with your words. Hold them, hug them, sharing similar situations if it seems appropriate. One of the things that I think is really hard about parenting, as well as Christian life in general, is we don't have formulas. Because what works for you with this kid might be really different than the other kid in your house, and totally different from your kid in your house, right? We just are more complex than that. So we can give you principles and things, but I really have to think and be connected to the Holy Spirit of God as I parent, as I walk through my day. And if I'm not surrendered to that, then it's really hard for the fruit of the Spirit to make its appearance, right? I have to be connected to Him. And especially in these harder moments, if I'm not practicing it when it's not hard, it's harder to in the harder moments. So what I mean then is, if it's appropriate, listen to the Spirit of God in you. Listen to the intuition He's given you and just go with it. And does that mean that sometimes you're going to make mistakes? Absolutely. Welcome to the club. I am a parent and I have totally made mistakes. So you're not alone. Here's some alternatives to the phrase calm down. I see that you're having a difficult time. Let me help you. Take a deep breath. I'm a big believer in deep breathing. Oh my goodness. And if you don't know what I mean by deep breathing, look it up on YouTube. You will find help. Okay? Single most effective intervention for me as a parent when my children are like big feeling moment or big feeling hour. If you need to hit something, hit the pillow. That can be frustrating. Let's figure this out together. I see that you're mad. How does that feel in your body? Again, this is partly language, like getting them to identify what's happening in their body engages the part of their brain, that prefrontal area, the language and all these other, I'm not as good at this as they are, but it engages the other areas of the brain that help calm and communicate with the amygdala. So once they're identifying what's happening in their body, they're starting to gain some control over the situation. Okay. Count to 10, you might do that as a parent. Do you want to squeeze my hand? How about a big hug? Let's focus on fixing the problem together. And if you're feeling sad, you can tell me about it. Okay. All of these are calm down strategies, just without the angering response of calm down. I don't deal well with that. This is just an example of something that I would put up in my house. Okay. So 5 steps to managing big emotions. Reminding myself it's never okay to hurt others. So prevention really is where a lot of this happens. What are the ground rules? So when I go into the grocery store, I don't have to do this anymore, but when my kids were little, you keep your hands to yourself, you stay in the cart, you keep your bottom on the cart. Okay? So I'm really specific with them. I let them know exactly what my expectations are. And then when they do it, I give them big praise for it. So they know that they're going to get the reinforcement from me for what their behavior is. Okay. Part of one of those ground rules is it's not okay to use my body to hurt other people. And that way you're setting yourself up for, you already know this rule, and here's the consequence. Here's what happens whenever you break that rule. Take 3 deep breaths, count slowly, use my words to say how I feel, ask for help, take time to calm down. Okay. Steve. I have handouts. Maybe. I keep feeling like I have my phone in my hand. He already made them. He didn't get them to me before. I think we got distracted. I'm gonna stop on information. Because one of the best ways to do this in learning about it, again, is experiencing. So when we get our copies, we're gonna play a bingo game on various ways that you might respond and what those would be called other than empathy. While we're waiting on that, let's just practice. So Eric, age 10, comes home from school, quieter than normal, retreats to his room. When asked if he is okay, he says that while playing basketball at recess, there were some kids stealing the ball and playing unfair. He gets more animated and frustrated while telling the story, saying that the other kids were not listening to or following the rules. Okay, what's your initial reaction? Like, what comes to your mind? And there are no like everything is welcome here. What's that?
Like what's fair?
Fairness. It's not fair. Yes, fairness. Excellent. What else? Rules are important. Yeah. Anything else? Initial response. Oh. Oh. Yeah. Right. So fair has to be fair from both sides, right? Okay. So if we think about empathy, the four things that Brené Brown teaches us, perspective taking, non-judgmental, and what feelings are they having, and what communicating that back to them. So what might you hear in this? What feeling words? And feel free to use your emoji sheet that Steve gave you. What feelings do you hear? Frustrated.
Hurt.
Hurt. Good. Yes. Anything else?
Angry.
Sad. Yeah. You wrecked my game of ball, man. This may or may not be a true situation. So what might be a way when, if this were your child or your grandchild, what might be an empathic response? Part is audience participation. Yeah. Sorry, I got the gentleman behind you, and then. Okay, so what? Let's practice. What would you say to him? Yeah, absolutely. Good, thank you. Yes. You, the lady in purple, yes.
I was just gonna say,
oh, that. Yeah, I feel sad to hear that. What else? Oh, it's not fun if you feel like you don't, or if you think you don't have a chance to win. Yes, addressing the fairness, Oh, how did you feel? Yes. So can, I'm cutting out some of the words, right? Because this is the hard, the challenge, the make me, make you, right? So I'm going to cut out as I hear it. I'm switching to how did you feel, right? And I'm sorry to put you on the spot. This is just something I have to do all the time too, right? So how did you feel? It sounds like you felt frustrated. And then you might say, like, what happened? Because part of it is we don't know the end of the story now, right? So before we jump into problem solve, we kind of need to know the end of the story. How did this resolve? And are they looking for us to help fix it? Or are they looking for us to just listen? What's that? I'm sorry, I still didn't. Oh, right, yes. I didn't get a call from the school, so hopefully not, right? So there's a lot of kind of quieting ourselves just to hear what's happening, either connecting with our own experience or asking them how they felt, or just communicating it back straight, like the, you felt this way, and not problem solving. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when,
you know, the rules get broken. Yes. No, not at all. And that requires being okay with our own discomfort. When things are unresolved, or left unfixed in our perspective, right? Somebody mentioned earlier, I'm going to throw this out here while I'm thinking about it, when your kid is following you and they're screaming or yelling, let's say it's not to the point where they're hurting anything yet, I totally support earbuds and earplugs that allow you to sort of still hear if something goes unmanageable. But if listening to them grates on you the way it does to me, sometimes we just need to like stick something in our ears that helps us be able to continue avoiding and ignoring the negative behavior. So I'm gonna have you turn in your, you have just one sheet, right? Okay, excellent. So on it, you have several different, I'm practically done, right? Or how much time do I have? Okay, we're gonna do this and then we'll stop. So you have advising, one-upping, educating. You have several things here. They're pretty explanatory, but I'm going to read you a statement with a response, and I want you to tell me which one you think it is. So feel free to shout out. I'm worried about having enough money to pay my bills this month. I'll loan you the money. Which one do you think as you look through that? Fixing it. Excellent. Look at my scar from the cycling accident. That's nothing. You should see the one I have on my knee. One-upping. Oh my gosh. I got caught in traffic for 2 hours in 100-degree weather and no air conditioning. That reminds me of the time. Storytelling. Yes, I hear a couple of you saying it. Yes. So sometimes storytelling is important. It's just the timing of it, right? I grew up with a dad who made it all about him. Okay, so his story overtook mine, and then what happened to me was lost. So storytelling is important. It has its place. We just want to make sure that it serves as a connection as opposed to a way of covering over. I feel so sad that my son was court-ordered to a rehab center. It's not your fault. You're a good parent. You did the best you could. When I heard sympathizing, I heard consoling. Consoling, yes, consoling. I just got the lab report back, and it was what I most feared. Oh, you poor thing. Can you see the goat, or whatever that thing was? Like, oh, at least. Okay, I have so much to do today. Are you feeling overwhelmed and wanting support? Empathizing, yes. It's scary for me to get up and speak in front of people. I think you should join Toastmasters. Advising, you guys are good at this. I've been trying to get this weight off and just feel frustrated. When did you first start having this problem? Interrogating, good. I lost my job. Cheer up, let's go eat. Shutting down, excellent. I'm really upset. You promised to be here at 11, and it is now after midnight. The reason I'm late is because... Okay, let me tell you about this one really quickly, and I think we'll end here, because you guys are really good at this. And you may hear yourself as we're talking through these. When somebody says to you, I'm sorry, but... Does that apology feel real? No. The but totally negates everything that came before it. Okay, so when we're talking to our kids or friends or spouses or anybody and you say, oh, you feel sad, but it totally like wipes out everything that you just said. Okay. Language is really important. You feel sad and. Okay, and is a beautiful word because it makes space for both. The feeling is still okay, valid, sometimes reasonable, and there's space to be able to work with it and manage it. You guys did great on the empathy bingo. If you, when you get the slides, there's a couple of other scenarios that you can look at and kind of say, oh, what would I do? What's my tendency? Awareness of our own self is key to making differences in how we parent and prevent and be proactive. So thank you guys. It's good to be with you.